Solomon. And this morning, a lot of people, I remember I mentioned to a few people here that I was going to do the Song of Solomon, two-part series, and one of our elders said, "Be careful." That's what he said. And I know that it's one of these books that we kind of shy away from because it has language that sometimes might make us cringe, but it's in the Bible, and there's nothing cringe-worthy about this book. It is a book that reminds us of many things about what marriage is. This is a Shunammite bride we're talking about, the bride that stood out the most to Solomon. And this morning we covered two things that we learn about from the Song of Solomon about marriage. That number one, marriage is a physical relationship. It's a physical relationship. If you married and you don't have that physical side to your relationship, you should try the best you can to have that. Also, it is, number two, an emotional relationship. It's a relationship that the couple can be open and honest to each other, express their feelings about each other. That's one of the elements we see in the Song of Solomon that we need in our marriages as well. Now, I'm going to cover the next two tonight, and that'll conclude the study on Song of Solomon. And it's not going to be a very long lesson, but I hope that it will be meaningful to you. Socrates says, quote, "By all means marry. If you get a good wife, you'll become happy. If you get a bad one, you'll become a philosopher." And obviously Socrates, or as they say in a movie I saw, Socrates, Socrates is obviously a philosopher. He must have not had a great marriage. But we see in the Bible, in the Song of Solomon, that marriage is also a spiritual relationship. It's a spiritual relationship. I'm going to turn this up because it blocks my words on here. God stated in Genesis 2, verse 18, that it's not good for a man to be alone. And I will make a helper suitable for him, or as the King James says, a helpmeet. Now, instead of immediately creating the woman for Adam, the Lord caused the animals to come to him and to name them. In Genesis 2, verse 20, it says, "And the man gave names to all the cattle, and to the birds of the sky, and to the beast of the field. But for Adam there was not found a helper suitable for him." Now, this helpmate or a completer is who God said he would bring to Adam. And he didn't immediately go to make her. But now all these animals are coming to him, and he's naming these animals, and they're coming to him, mama and papa, animal. He sees that every animal has a match. And it was in this process that Adam learned that he did not have somebody for him. Now, knowing there was not a suitable candidate for him, is it any wonder that following the ribectomy that God put on Adam after he caused a deep sleep, pulled a rib out, fashioned the woman out of the rib of the man, he woke up, is it any surprise to see his excitement? Because he went to sleep knowing that he needed somebody, that God promised him somebody who would be a completer for him. And he wakes up and he says in Genesis 2 verse 23, "Now this is bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh. She shall be called woman because she was taken out of the man." Adam had learned a deep spiritual relationship, an appreciation for this beautiful woman standing before him, and her vice versa. Together they would complete, they would help meet what they lacked in each other. They are a completer. Now this happens to be the same verse that Paul quotes in Ephesians chapter 5, verse 28 through 32, to describe the spiritual relationship of the church to the groom, Christ. He said, so husbands ought to love their wives as their own bodies. He who loves his own wife loves himself. For no one ever hated his own flesh, but nourishes and cherishes it, just as Christ also does the church, because we are members of his body. For this cause a man shall leave his father and mother, and cleave to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. This mystery is great, but I am speaking with reference to Christ and the church. The same way that Adam had a spiritual relationship with Eve, they were completers. They were to help each other make it to their goals in God. Christ also helps the church. You see, there is a spiritual relationship between Christ and the church. We're not just a group that meets here on the first day of the week and on Wednesdays. But we are a group that literally are helping each other on our way to heaven. You know, when one of us are down, the other one needs to go and help encourage them. If somebody's out of line, the other one needs to help them walk the line. You know, there's a lot of different things we do for each other in this relationship. The Song of Solomon takes the spiritual relationship between the husband and wife and consistently uses language to describe qualities of spirituality that the church is to have toward Christ. No book in the Bible communicates this matrimonial spiritual values better than the Song of Solomon. Every chapter of the song exposes another parallel spiritual quality for the church to have in their passion for Jesus Christ. There is purity. You know, the Christians to have purity. The church is to be a pure entity unto God. Psalm 1 verse 3, therefore do the virgins love thee. Revelation 14:4 says, for they are virgins, these are they who follow the Lamb whithersoever he goeth. There is communion. Psalm 2 verse 13, arise my love, my fair one, and come away. Revelation 19 verse 7, for the marriage of the Lamb has come, and his bride has been made ready. There's commitment. In Psalm 3 verse 4, we're told, I held him and would not let him go. And yet, we see in Hebrews 13:5, I will never forsake you nor leave you. We learn the quality of presentation. In Psalm 4 verse 7, you are altogether beautiful, my darling. There is no blemish in you. Yet in Ephesians 5 verse 27, we find out we're the glorious church and that it should be presented holy and without blemish before God. There is friendship in Christianity. In Psalm 5 verse 16, and he is wholly desirable. This is my beloved and this is my friend. Yet Jesus said in 15 verse 13 of John, greater love hath no man than this, than a man lay down his life for his friends. You are my friends. Did it make you feel good that Jesus called you, the church, his friends? There's leadership. In Psalm 6 verse 3, he who pastures his flock among the lilies, yet we find in John 10:16, and they shall become one flock with one shepherd, and that shepherd is Jesus Christ. There's admiration in marriage. Psalm 7 verse 6, how beautiful and how delightful you are, my love, with all your charms. And yet in Revelation 21 verse 12, we see that we're made ready as the bride adorned for her husband. We're at a wedding, church. There is attentiveness that we have in Christianity. Psalm 8 verse 13, my companions are listening to your voice. Let me hear it. Yet in John 10:27, Jesus said, my sheep hear my voice, and I know them, and they follow me. If you want to know the spirituality of the church to the groom, Christ, go back and read the Song of Solomon. Look at all the qualities that that relationship shares with our relationship with Christ. If you forget how important we are to Jesus, back and read the song. Just go back and read it. Look at that love between that husband and wife. Look at how they describe each other. And look at the qualities that they communicate. And I think you'll see that you are very, very valuable to Jesus Christ. There is a spiritual nature to our marriages. And finally, it is a lifelong relationship. Look at all the different relationships we will have in our lifetime. We have friendships. I've had a lot of friends come and go. By the way, this is Matt's last Sunday, right? Bye. Where are you? There he is. He'll be coming back some. But friends come and go. There's a lot of times where you'll have a friend and you say, well, I didn't talk with this person for weeks, and the weeks become years, and you have a new friend that might replace him. There's the parent-child relationship. You know, the kids get older, they move out, then they have their kids, then their kids have kids, and you're not maybe as close as you were before when they were young. You have a different relationship with them. There's the employer and employee relationship. Sometime you're working for a company for a long time, and then you switch jobs. But the relationship that we have here on earth that should be the longest relationship is our marriage. That's the one that we see emphasized most of all. Out of all the relationships we have, your marriage to your spouse is to be the most enduring. The Song of Solomon reinforces this belief. It is a relationship that is publicly demonstrated to all without shame or regret. Listen to the song in 2 verse 4. He has brought me to his banquet hall. His banner over me is love. You think that groom is ashamed at all of the bride? No. It is a relationship that is worthy to bring home for mom and dad. You know, we have that saying today. You know, I'm going to take her home to eat, meet mom. You know, that means that person is special. Well, Song 3, verse 4 says, scarcely I left them when I found him whom my soul loves. I held on to him and would not let him go until I had brought him into my mother's house and into the room of him who conceived me. It is a relationship that is worthy of the very best protection available. Listen to how this is described in Song 3, 7, and 8. Behold, it is the traveling couch of Solomon. 60 mighty men around it, and mighty men of Israel, all of them wielders of the sword, expert in war. Each man has his sword at his side, guarding against the terrors of the night. Do you think that bride feels protected when she's with Solomon the groom? Absolutely. We also see that three times Solomon labels his bride with the endearing phrase, my sister. My sister. Guys, if you're married to a Christian wife, you're married to a sister in Christ. Don't ever forget that. And sisters, if you have a brother for a wife, don't ever forget that you're married to a brother. That's the highest term of endearment. Song 4, verse 10. How beautiful is your love, my sister, my bride. Song 4, verse 12, the garden locked. The garden locked is my sister, my bride, a garden locked, a spring sealed up. Song 5, 1, I have come into my garden, my sister, my bride. See, the sister comes before the bride. That's why you need to be careful who you choose as your spouse. Because if she's a sister first, guess what? You have the highest connection, and then the wife becomes second, and the husband becomes second. This communicates camaraderie of an enduring helpmate that we talked about in 2 verse 18. Sent from God to help people to get to heaven, including yourself. It's a relationship where both are each other's best help. Song 6 verse 3, I am my beloved, and my beloved is mine, he who pastures his flock among the lilies. That is a lifelong relationship. We will have many friends in this life that will come and go, but our marriages, we're taught in the scriptures, are to be lifelong. I know it doesn't always turn out that way. You do your best, but that's the goal, is to have a lifelong marriage. Too many times people enter into a marriage and they don't even have that factor in mind. Marriage should be for life. Song 6, verse 8 and 9. There are 60 queens and 80 concubines, maidens without number. But my dove, my perfect one, is unique. She is her mother's only daughter. She is a pure child of the one who bore her. That is a special relationship. It's a relationship that's until death do us part. Song 8, verse 6. Put me like a seal over your heart, like a seal on your arm, for love is as strong as death. Now, death is pretty strong. And love in a marriage should be as strong as dead is to the body that's lifeless. It's the love in the marriage, the commitment, that really brings life to it. Marriage is a lifelong commitment. There is nothing that you find in the Song of Solomon that communicates a temporary relationship. You tell me that if Solomon thinks the Shunammite bride is just a passing ship in the night, she's not. This is a love that he's going to carry the rest of his life, and her as well. They are committed for the rest of their life in the bond of holy matrimony, and we would do well to heed the message today in a society that has made marriages disposable and shacking up acceptable. We need to understand that we're in it for life. Go back and read the Song of Solomon and see the permanency of that marriage. But I want to close with this story. I was once in a hospital room visiting a deathly ill woman. Her name was Fern. She had trouble sleeping. She was on her deathbed. And as usual, I would go and spend time with them in the hospital. And I remember Fern, which I've done so many times, I ask her, is there anything you'd like me to read in the scripture? And she responded, yes. I said, what is it, Fern? She said, Song of Solomon. Is there anything else that you would like me to read, Fern? She said, no, I want Song of Solomon. There's a rule. When a dying woman asks you to read something out of the Bible, don't question it twice. So I began to read that. And I was in the book for about 25 minutes. And I kept reading, and I wasn't thinking so much about what I was reading. I was trying to figure out why Fern would request this book, because it creeped me out. After 25 minutes, I did not hear the footsteps of the nurses and doctors walking by anymore. And I thought, uh-oh. And I looked behind, and I could see the shadows of motionless groups of people outside the door. They were listening. Where I was at 9:30 that night in the book was at this passage. Now picture this, nearly an 80-year-old dying woman and a young, handsome preacher and reading this, but you don't know it's being read. Okay, you're a nurse, you're walking by, and you hear this voice saying this to this woman. Song 7, 1 through 3. How beautiful are your feet in sandals. O prince's daughter, your curves of your hips are like jewels, the work of the hands of an artist. Your navel is like a round goblet, which never lacks mixed wine. Your belly is like a heap of wheat fenced about with lilies. Your two breasts are like two fawns, twins of a gazelle. Needless to say, you understand why they gathered at the door. And when I noticed that I was in that predicament, I immediately defaulted to the only thing that could bail me out. I said, Song of Solomon, chapter 7, verse 4. There were snickers and there were moving feet. They understood now. I was very, very much embarrassed. But I finished the book, and Fern dozed off to sleep. I couldn't understand why she wanted me to read the Song of Solomon. Philippians I could see. Oh, yeah, Romans. That'll help you. But Song of Solomon on your deathbed? And I finally figured it out a few days later, speaking to her daughter. You see, her daughter said years prior, Fern was married for over 27 years. And her husband, all that time, came home one day. He was always a cruel man. He was a man who didn't love her the way that he should have. He came home and he said, "I am done with you. I want a divorce." And he married a younger woman within a few weeks. Fern had two children with this man, and through years of verbal and emotional abuse, this man dumped her like a bag of trash. She was extremely upset. She even had to be treated for depression. She would often find herself reading the Song of Solomon to find comfort, to envision a relationship she wished she always had. That was a book she read throughout her marriage. When he would come home and be verbally abusive to her, she would go read about a marriage that was just fine. That's what she wanted. And so on her deathbed, years later, she wanted the possible last things to ever be said to her was the marriage she always wished she had. She wanted that lifelong relationship. She wanted that loving relationship. She wanted a relationship that said, "I'm not going to let you go. I'm going to treat you with love and adoration and respect." This is why I think we need to be reading the Song of Solomon. Because if we paralleled our marriages to that book, I think we'd all fall short. We need to go back and see a marriage that is filled with passion, with love, commitment, and respect. I'm persuaded if we did that, our marriages would be long and strong. The husband-wife relationship is the most serious relationship that we could ever enter into here on earth. What is the contribution of Song of Solomon to the church? I hope you see this. Marriage is physical, emotional, spiritual, and lifelong. And I suggest you go back and read it with your wife, read it with your husband, or read it by yourself and understand what a great marriage really is. If you would like to respond this evening, I know this lesson was short, but you have 20 minutes to respond. If you want to respond to this lesson this evening, if you want to renew your relationship with Christ, if you need to enter into a relationship with Christ, for whatever reason, why don't you come while we stand and sing?